This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming production or Deborah Harkness. All views expressed are solely our own.
It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome to episode 39 of the All Souls Podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
Or Shimmer. Or is she?
Sometimes.
Okay.
You guys, you realize we're halfway through. The season's half over.
That's true.
They were saying that online. I've had to completely stay off of Twitter on Fridays.
Why?
Because everyone's live tweeting it.
But you've already seen them.
And yes, I've already seen it. But it's still really annoying because I have my notifications turned on for Discovery of Witches TV and for Deb and for a couple of other things. And it's just like constant. If I go onto Twitter, one, it's all I see because every single post is about the episode. And then two, the notifications keep popping up. Deb posted, Discovery of Witches posted. And I'm like, ugh. And the main reason I don't want to see it is because I don't want to be influenced by reading other people's comments because I don't want to accidentally.
Yeah, you're right. I hear you.
I like to go into our recording without having a bunch of other people's opinions.
Without being influenced. Well, yeah, because then even if you start reading something, even if you, yeah, you would have to obviously agree with it for it to jive with what, for it to slip and marry with what you have already thought or what your thoughts or opinions already are. But yeah, if you do that too much or maybe even a little when you come to this recording, you may not to separate the things because you're talking about, you know, a certain scene or a certain whatever. And even if you love someone's comment, if it wasn't you, I mean, you might remember something like, oh, something really struck you. And you might say, oh, I remember reading on Twitter, blah, blah, blah. And I really agree. Like that can happen and does happen for both of us. But yeah, if you do too much or if it's just a certain comment that maybe is not like hit over the head, you know, like huge epiphany kind of thing. And it just kind of slips in with your own. Then yeah, it starts to become your description and your opinion when it wasn't your opinion originally, which is not a bad thing. It's good to read. But yeah, I agree with you. I try not to get involved in conversations or even with you, which, you know, and I think our audience knows, we don't really, at least we've explained before, we don't chat about the episodes before recording. We have chatted in generalities about the season, but not really, and sometimes about like the order of things, because I mess up the order of things a lot. But yeah, we absolutely don't just sit there and say, let's talk about this, because,
well, it's fresh
and as original as possible, because we already know that we're not going to be the only ones having these opinions.
No, of course not. But I like to be firm and resolute. And so everyone knows that anything that I'm saying when we're recording is 100% my thoughts. And it's not something that was influenced by something somebody else said on Twitter. Or it's not me rehashing somebody else's opinion. So I like everyone to feel comfortable in the fact that I'm not about to steal somebody else's opinions about an episode and try to throw it off as my own thoughts.
Well, also note that the same idea or thought or opinion can be held by multiple people independently without even speaking to each other. So there has to be an understanding and an acceptance that there is, as Philippe says, there is nothing new under the sun for me. So there is tons of stuff new under the sun for us and for all of us because we're not Philippe. However, when it comes to opinions and insights, yeah, not everyone is making every single insight. However, especially those who have read the books, doesn't mean we're smarter. It just means that we're going to be looking for certain things and thus might notice them because we're looking because we've read. It's not better. It's not worse. It's just different. However, I'm sure there are lots of times where there are non-book readers who see things that not just pick up on things that maybe I or you or other readers have, but also their point of view, their virgin eyes, if you will, or ears, virgin eyes and ears, are like, it's a breath of fresh air sometimes, many times, to hear their opinions of things because they're not influenced by the books. We've said this about Outlander for years, and we've said it a number of times about Discovery of Witches, is I don't think either of us would have given up the fact that we've read the books because we love the experience. We love Deb's work. We love Jennifer Iketa. We love Saskia Marlefeld. We've loved all of this and the people we've been able to speak to and the travel we've been able to do. We have loved all aspects of diving into these stories and meeting the characters and meeting some of the cast and meeting Deb have and interviewing many, many of them. But it's still the one thing that you can't have. Like, you, no one can have all the things, right? If you have read everything and talked to everyone, which we haven't talked to everyone, but if you've read everything, and Summer, I think, came to the books, these books, relatively early for the books. I came relatively late for the books, like after the third one was published, right? That's when you told me about it. Or maybe you told me about it before, but I didn't read them until book three had come out. So
you don't take me seriously at first ever when I bring a book to you. It takes years.
Well, that's true, at least for Outlander and this one. So my point is, you can have read everything, traveled to sea sites, traveled to fan events, you know, made friends in the fandom, met Deb, just all the things, right? Done interviews. You can have all that wonderful experience and background. Doesn't make you an expert. It just means that you've spent a lot of time in it, right? Spent a lot of money on it. We will never have, we'll have fresh reactions to things, meaning like everyone has a fresh reaction the first time they see an episode because it's all new to us, the experience. But I so envy people who have not read, because their experiences of these shows, Outlander and Discovery, which probably any kind of book to TV adaptation, I envy that. I spent a long time saying that I envy that. But yeah, so you guys who haven't read, you haven't missed anything as far as an experience. It's a different experience. But when this is done, or whenever you choose to, if you choose to, the books are there. That's the beautiful thing. So this episode, we're greeted with Galaglass pretty early, and but not very long. He accompanies them across the channel, and they land slash stop. I guess you say land because they got to land. So when I say someone landed, I think of a plane, right? But I guess a boat lands? I don't know. They didn't dock. Well, I don't know that they docked. There was no, I guess you don't have to anchor to dock. They docked, stopped the boat, whatever you call it, whatever verb that is. They stopped at Mont Saint-Michel. And I don't think we hear in this episode, I think it was in the last episode, but I know we heard it at some point that he's like, yeah, this is as far as I go because, yeah, no, the French killed my dad.
I was, when this whole thing kind of started, they're rowing ashore, right? And he's like, oh, it seems like, you know, they already know we're here. And they see the horses at the top. And
oh, yeah. All the people are already lined up. Yeah.
So at first, when I first started watching this, because I forgot that they landed in France, but there's still a really long travel.
Yeah.
Once they land in France, right? At first I was like, duh, they were spotted. I'm like, it's a big boat. It's been there a while. It took a while to row to shore. That's not really surprising. But then once they started traveling to Septour, I was like, oh, no, that was pretty spectacular for them to see them already. Because they had to time it just right. But he gave them a week. So they could have been camped out on the bluff.
For days.
For a week waiting for the boat.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and they probably, yeah, like they're probably his paid staff of some way. Or, you know, maybe it's a, you know, rough and tumble team that's been hired, who knows? Or he's paid his main man, Pierre, to, you know, get together some brigands, but to get together a team, right? Directly or indirectly, they are working for Philippe. They're being paid by Philippe. So yeah, they're definitely ultimately Philippe's peeps. That's funny. That kind of rhymes. Philippe's peeps.
That's his favorite Easter candy. Nobody touched Philippe's peeps.
So Diana is having a hard time much of the episode, because whether it's the travel or the actually being in the castle, she's having a hard time. So Philippe's men, as Summer said, meet them when they land in France at Mont Saint-Michel. Galaglass is traveling. He said, I'm going to travel ahead to Rudolph's court in Bohemia, and I'll wait for you. He's like, I will leave all the ladies in my path. You know, these broken-hearted people, all these things. He's like so full of himself, but
no, he said, follow the trail of vanquished enemies and satisfied women. And I was like, fan self.
He didn't say heartbroken. He said satisfied. Good Lord.
Satisfied women.
Yep.
He has a healthy opinion of himself. But
it's probably well deserved.
Yes. I feel like when Matthew and Galaglass were saying goodbye to each other and they kind of talked about, he said, I am my father's son. And I was thinking to myself, Hugh must really have been the best de Clermont of all of the de Clermonts, because we never actually meet him except through other people's memories of him, right? But we never actually get to experience him. And he, just the way that Galaglass is and the way that he was, and then what, Fernando, isn't that his mate that we find out about later? Just all of the people that Hugh surrounded himself with were such great people. They were kind. They were honorable. You know,
they were hot.
And I really think that they were super hot. He had great taste in men.
I mean, vampires are pretty much super hot, so.
True. I always get kind of touched when you have these moments, because I'm like, I really feel like we missed out on not knowing Hugh in the book series. I hope that Deb will write a Hugh book. That'd be fun.
If listeners to us who are watching the TV show have not read the books, because yes, clues are given, things are stated, they're not necessarily kept from us, but not because they have so much to cover and is not the main story points, we're not going to get a lot of descriptions of family trees. So in case you haven't gleaned it, Galaglass calls him uncle and her He doesn't quite call her auntie yet. He might. He may. He may, hint, hint. But he definitely mentions Matthew is his uncle. And I don't know that he ever refers to Philippe as his grandfather, but what is implied is that if it's his uncle, then his father would have been Matthew's brother. And that's Hugh. That's who's dead. That's who was killed. And that's why Galagos won't step foot on French soil. So Hugh, his father, who is Matthew's brother, has died or is dead. And thus, Hugh would have been Philippe's, another of Philippe's sons, correct?
I believe so.
Okay. So that's just a little step on the side, because it's easy, at least for me. I can't speak for Summer, but I know for me, it can be easy to get lost in the family tree stuff, especially when they're not even here.
Well, especially when they have multiple family trees. They have like what, their actual family trees from when they were humans. And then now they have their vampire family trees. So it's like, it's a lot.
And then they get together with humans and they have new family trees. Yes, it's a lot.
And then Diana makes trees appear from making knots.
So lots of horseback riding in this episode. And then we have our Pyrex opening. But rather than go back to the horsies,
I feel like those horses were absolutely sent as not only transportation, but as a message. Because those were some menacing looking war horses. Like they were all black.
They were like all in black.
Yeah, like they were kind of setting the tone, right?
Well, the whole, not just the horses, the people atop the horses, like from a distance, the whole entourage was nothing but black.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It was like they were meant to send a physical message of, you know, wariness to them, to kind of keep them, well, this is what's coming for you. Because it almost felt like while they were being guided and they were given transportation, so they weren't like walking, because that would have made it take even longer. You know, it almost felt kind of like they were being escorted. Like they didn't have a choice in the matter. Even if they had wanted to walk, they wouldn't have been able to, you know?
Yeah, they needed horses because it couldn't have taken months to get to Satur, could it have?
I don't know, but
I think he meant the whole thing in general takes months. Like their trip across the channel to see Philippe, to handle as long as, be there as long as they needed to, and then to get to, I think it's a lot further journey. I mean, I would have to look on a map and calculate approximate distances, and that is not, I'm not bad at it, but I would need to remind myself where approximately Satur supposedly is. And then I would think actually that the journey from Satur to Bohemia is longer than the shore where Mont Saint-Michel is, the abbey, to Satur. Because that's still in France, even though France is big. But Bohemia, like, that's past what is modern-day Czech Republic, Prague. That's in, like, that's further east than Germany. I think it's just north of Austria. The first time I was in Vienna with another, only a friend, an acquaintance, we were traveling together through a work abroad program. And we wanted to go to Vienna, and we only had a very little bit of time. And so we had to choose between going to Budapest and Prague. And we talked to many different people. And I really, because of the whole CC thing, like I was and am a CC nerd, with Elisabeth von Österreich, a CC fan. And I still would like to go to make it to all of her castles. I've been to Greece just for that. So, I mean, I've gone to the most far flung one, but I haven't made it to Hungary yet, to Gödöllő. Anyway, so I was thinking, oh, you know, we do have time, but I didn't, this trip wasn't only about me, it was the two of us. And we talked to some people who are not fellow, but other travelers, and at the youth hostel, and they were like, yeah, if you only have time to do one city, do Prague. We were not disappointed. Prague was amazing. It is such a magical, if you guys ever have a chance to go, it is such a magical city. Definitely go. But yeah, it's a lot further. So we're immediately back in London, and Kit is napping at a bar.
No, he passed out at that bar. He passed out at that bar the night before, and the owner was like, kicked him awake, and he's like, okay.
And the owner's like, it's time to go. So he pays and he leaves. He's definitely rough. And as he's walking out, he sees a whore with a man. There's some whores in this, what do you call it? Alley. There's some whores in this alley. But it's not a whore. It's Louisa, Matthew's sister, we learn. Also a vamp, hence his sister. And so
Louisa de Clermont, she was Isabeau's daughter, and she's also afflicted with blood rage, but she's also crazy. Do we think that her crazy is her crazy blood rage related, or is she just crazy and blood ragey?
That's a good point. I think it's probably a little bit of both. The danger is her blood rage. I don't know that blood, I think blood rage can drive a vamp mad, but it doesn't necessarily always make them insane. It just makes them extra dangerous, but it can drive them. Because like Matthew has been able to, for the most part, control it. So, but it's not a hoor, it's Louisa. Matthew's sister, as Summer said, his blood sister, because they were both made by Isabeau. So we have to assume that Kit is going to tell her everything. So back in France, more horseback. Matthew lets Diana know that Isabeau won't be there. If I recall correctly, she was at a witch trial. I think it was in Trier. I might be making that up, but I think it was Trier. But anyway, she was definitely not home at cette tour at this point in time, which is a blessing because it would have made things a lot different. She needed to not be there. Put it this way. Deb did this on huge fat purpose. London. Louisa thinks that Matthew must, now that she's been told, whatever she's been told, Louisa thinks that Matthew must be enchanted by this witch because it's the only way that Matthew would be with the witch. And Kit's all, actually, no, it's love. He's like, I tried, but it's actually love. And so she's like, oh, Kit. And she tries to hit on him, but realizes that he is still in love with Matt. So her task.
I could have really used some subtitles in this scene. I was having a really hard time hearing what they were saying because they were very soft talking. What?
I swear to you. I used to only use my AirPods, like if I'm out in public or, you know, walking around the house listening to something. But no, I use AirPods in both ears for watching this. I pair them with my iPad mini. And girlfriend, I get everything.
Well, I was able to Airstream it to the TV at the place I was at yesterday. So I was able to watch it on a big screen TV, which made me very happy because I've been watching it on my phone and on a computer. So I watched it on a really big screen, but I could not get the sound loud enough that I could make out everything they were saying in those hushed conversations because they're literally talking like this in a scene.
Yes. So her entire task has now been set up in this episode, or at least this episode, to her, maybe her arc, this her, at least the beginning of her arc, whatever, this season is to keep Kit entertained. And it entertains her too. Don't get me wrong. She's got to get something out of it, but she definitely wants to cheer him up. And I mean, she cares for him as much as she could care for him, but she just wants a good time and she wants to be entertained. And so now she's like, great, I can have even more fun by making sure he's entertained. And it's not very deep. It's just that. Back in France, we are in an area of Anjou and we get a little history lesson. Matthew tells her this, that the guard that's around us is a reminder that Matthew must show himself before Philippe. He's like, it's not just to protect us and show us the way. Yeah, I mean, that's sure. But it's like, it's a visual display show of not just power, but we're like, it's going to make sure that we get there.
Well, and control. It's a control thing. And he said that the closer they get to Septour, the less free they are. But I do love the progression of Diana on the traveling, because in the beginning, she's got the full dress on, right? And then by the time, after a day of travel, the corset's gone. After a day after that, she's basically just wearing the shirt and the skirt, barely. And then she has pants on at one point. And then when she actually shows up at Septour, she looks like hell. Like, I don't even know what she's wearing anymore. It's like the shirt barely on whatever she's got on the bottom. Like, that was not remotely like presentable to meet your quote unquote father-in-law. They looked rough. She looked rough. But Matthew was perfectly put together the whole time.
Well, he's a vampire.
Well, yes.
He doesn't need as much sleep. So then we're sent back to London. And there's gunplay and they're having target practice and someone comes in and says,
in the middle of the Blackfriars.
And someone comes in and says, hey, you're going to wake the rest of the Blackfriars. And what Louise is like, well, okay, she may or may not have shot him.
He called her a whore.
I think the guy was actually addressing Kit. I don't know if he said, well, he was addressing both of them, but he says something to Kit like, you and your whore, something like that. Yeah. And she's like, yeah, that's not okay. And she's like, boom, you're dead. She doesn't take kindly. So basically, don't call people whores because they may have guns.
Well, not only that, but she's like, this is the second time I've been called a whore and I don't like it. And the first time was by Kit. And that was earlier in the day.
Yeah.
So that was also a message to Kit. Hey, maybe don't call me a whore anymore because I could shoot you too.
Well, I can't say warm. Are demons considered warm blood? They're considered warm bloods, right?
They are still basically human. Yeah, but they're creatures, but they're biologically, they're still human.
Same as witches. They're warm. Okay. So yeah. So he's easily disposed of. or disposed with, killed, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So then we get the longest stretch of scene, not of a single scene, but of a place. So I've been going back and forth, somewhere in France, London. Now we're in France the rest of the time. And so no going back to London.
Did it seem like they had a different tent set up every time they camped?
I don't remember seeing a tent until I saw the first tent. Like, I don't remember them having many tents. Again, I could have definitely missed it.
Because, like, the interior of where she woke up the one time, it looked like she was just on the ground.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's like half in, half out.
In their getting it on scene, there was like a feather bed and, you know, like a full on mattress underneath them. Like a poof. Like, it was like, that looks way more plush than the time she was sleeping on the ground in the last scene.
Like, I couldn't imagine. Like, being on horseback, I mean, okay, horseback is its own thing, but being on horseback, you're outside, right? You're outdoors, you're in a lot of clothing. And then you have to keep going in the torrential rains. And then how do things get dry? I mean, like, there's going to be mold. There's going to be, I mean, I would not want to take that trip out in that manner. Like, there was no covered wagon or carriage, whatever, but you couldn't, right? Because you're going through mountain passes and all kinds of things are in woods. It's not a place. It's a place for horses. It's not a place for wagons or carriages because they're traveling rough. So unterwegs, which just means en route or underway, all across or on the way in France, on the way to Sept Tours. So they're in the beginning, they're actually sleeping on the ground. They don't always have a tent. And then the weather is kind of nasty. I do not envy them this journey. And Matthew acknowledges that her journey is harder as a warm blood and as someone who is riding side saddle. So, and then he throws in, I don't mean he's like throwing it at her. No, because it's very loving when he said this. He's like, I acknowledge that you're having, he's like, I'm so sorry. This is so hard for you. I acknowledge it's harder for you because of this and this and this. And he's like, and number three, I love you entirely. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's such a very sweet. So sweet.
No, but he says one more thing, I'm afraid.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's going to be.
Exactly.
One more bad thing.
So they pass a little bit later. They pass. Was that a burning home or a burning village?
It was a very large structure.
Okay.
But I believe it was one structure.
Okay. So they pass a burning structure. And Diana, her instinct is to check for survivors. But Matthew's like, no, we have to go. So it's not that he doesn't want to help people. It's that they are on a clock because they have a week. So my question that I put out there just a few minutes ago when I said, I wonder how long this trip is. It can't be months. Dude, they had a week to get there. So of course it's not a month. When he said months, he meant the whole thing. Getting to France, getting to Bohemia, getting back to London. That will take months. We know from the warning / whatever you want to call it, order from Philippe. They have until the end of the week to get, or they have a week to get to Sept Tours. So it's hot to trot. This is definitely not months. This is a week or under. So I wanted to correct myself there because I just remembered. So they pass the burning structure and she wants to check for survivors. And Matthew's like, we can't, we have to go. They're on literally on the clock. They have to make it to Sept Tours. And it's kind of sad that they can't, you know, stop. It just shows their desperation that, because Matthew could actually go in and search and not be hurt. I think I guess fire could kill them too, but he would have a lot better chance of surviving that and healing from it than, of course, Diana. But although she has magic, so any hoozle, they don't do that. So the people who, he also says, no, the people who did this, meaning the arsonists, the murderers, whatever, could be nearby. So they're like, we got to go because we got a time limit and it could be dangerous. So no. And it's telling us not just for them in the world of people who are in the know about creatures, is it dangerous? It's a freaking dangerous time in France anyway, because we get a lot of backstory as they're traveling. It's a time of major unrest, specifically between Protestants and Catholics. Like, they would kill each other for, you know, they kill each other. So it's a lot. It's just, it's a really bad time to be traveling through France. It's a really bad time, but they have to. So then on the next scene or a next scene, they're kind of traveling, trailing each other, like single horse by horse. And we see from a kind of a wide shot that Diana is so tired, she falls off her horse. And Matthew's like, nope.
But they don't have time to stop and rest.
I know, right?
But they still don't have time to stop and rest. So he's like, I'll just pick you up and carry you. Or maybe they need to give her a seatbelt.
No, they need to have her not ride side saddle. Oh, wait, by then does she have? No, not yet, because I wrote it down. She doesn't have breeches yet. She's still side saddle, or at least we're meant to believe she's still side saddle. So then she falls off. Exactly. They don't rest. They stop long enough to pick her up and put her on his horse. And then they do actually, when it's time to stop for the night, a man named Pierre is helping her warm by the fire. And she gets sleep and rest, and Diana has had it enough. She's like, Matthew must be saying this, no one can hide the truth from Philippe. But she's like, I won't let Philippe get between us, dude. And Matthew's like, you don't know. And then they get the fancy tent where they kind of start making out heavily. And she says, no matter what, I'm yours. Now they get a little freaky.
Yeah. And this is the tent with the big old cushy mattress.
And they get a little freaky, but not all the way freaky, as we learn. In case, again, if you're a non-book reader or non-series reader and you're just watching the show and you have assumed that they've slept together, have consummated, you would be wrong.
They have had sexual relations. Penetrative. Is that how it's pronounced? Penetrative intercourse.
So they do whatever they do, but not all the way. And in that tent, she wants him, and he says, not yet, in time. So we don't know, and she doesn't know. We're not given a reason, and they may have conversations off screen, but I don't think she's given a reason. She's certainly not given it the truth, whatever that is. And then in the next scene, it's in the morning, and I just wrote, morning has broken, because it's like the light's full on her, the sunlight, whatever, morning light, and she's like waking up
and she's cranky because she's not getting her needs taken care of,
and it's time to ride again. But as she wakes up, she sees that there are breeches on the pillow next to her. So it's going to be a little bit easier now. And she gets up and they go out, and then Pierre leaves them, and he is going off to Bohemia to help prep for things there and play with Galloglass. But not in a dude way.
Keep an eye on Galloglass is what he said. To keep an eye on him. And I'm like, I volunteer his tribute.
So they're almost to set to it by this time. Matthew tells her, try not to read Philippe. It can't be done. You're not going to be able to tell what's going on within his noggin. It can't be done. And when he sees Philippe, he tells her this, when I see Philippe, a wound of loss will be ripped open. And so non-readers, what you know is that in their time, in our time, in the present time, Philippe is dead. Philippe is gone. We don't get a lot of, we don't find out a lot about him in series one. We find out, we know that he's his stepfather. We know that he's married to Isabeau, and we know that there were other vampires that each of them made. We know that it's referred to several times. We know he died during World War II or just after he was killed by the Nazis. We don't know exactly every single physical thing that was done to him. We just know that he was ultimately killed by the Nazis, or his death was caused ultimately by the Nazis. And he was, when they found him, he was basically a mess, a wreck, and there was no saving him. Okay, so all we know is that he died as a result of his injuries made on him by the Nazis. That's all we know. And so this wound that Matthew is talking about, at least at this point, is that this father, whom I've done my best to get over his death, or, you know, get through, I'm still living with this mourning, there's that wound there that's begun to heal. It's going to rip the hell open. And he's kind of warning her. He hasn't told her everything, but he's kind of warning her. And then they arrive. And as they walk in, yeah, she looks bedraggled. But man, all those candles. And then we hear Matthäus. Like, I love it. I love his old pronunciation. So all the doors and gates, seemingly, are see-through. They're all like cagey. We get a little bit of the theme. I haven't spoken much about music this episode, huh? We get a little bit of the theme behind them as they walk. It's very minimal, and it's spooky. Philippe asks Matthew to explain himself. What's up? And then Matthew comes over, puts the coin in his hand. He's like, we've been summoned. We're here. We're done. Or like, I've arrived. Let's get to the point. And Philippe says that, pointing to Diana, is your explanation? And he says she's a witch. And Diana's like, well, actually, I'm a weaver.
Diana, probably not the best time.
Doesn't matter. Probably the most, and this is what I was referring to earlier, when she's like, actually, I'm a weaver. And he says probably the most truthful line that embodies Philippe. There is nothing new under the sun for me. He's not easily impressed. She says that she tries to one-up him, but tries to show that she's on his level, or like she's not going to cower to him, right? She says, I've seen things that aren't even written in the books yet. So yeah, or aren't even in history books yet. So that one line, Philippe realizes they are TTs. So he immediately asks questions like, why did you come to this time? You must be in danger. So he's very, he's like on it. He's on it. He's again, he's nothing is new under the sun. So he makes really quick links and not decisions, but maybe that too. But he makes connections and surmises it really quickly. He's like, oh, well, you would not have done that if you weren't in danger, because that's the only reason to come back. She gives him her brief bio.
Did you notice that Philippe's writing area in his office looked a lot like Matthew's writing area in his, like, it was the desk with all of the letters hanging and drying, and I mean, it was just, it looked almost identical. Like, I was like, I bet he takes after his dad.
I'll have to go look back and look at that. So she gives Philippe a very brief bio, and Philippe says that if the relationship, meaning Matthew and Diana, had meant something to him, Matthew, they would have consummated it. And Matthew's all, please don't.
This was so funny to me because the interchange, it was like they kept one-upping each other, her and Philippe. Diana and Philippe kept one-upping each other, right? Like, well, I know this. Well, I know that. One lad was like, Diana spills the tea. Well, I'm this and, you know, this is my history, your bio, like you said. And then Matthew starts freaking out because he can see what Philippe's about to say. And then Philippe spills all the rest of the tea. About the fact that they're not, quote unquote, as mated as she thinks.
Because Philippe's like, if you were actually mated, actually loved her and she meant something to you, you would have consummated it. So that pulls the rug out from Diana. And he gives proof that he knows.
Which is just fresh on him turning her down for sexy times.
Exactly. And Philippe...
So she's already pissed. So she's disgruntled. And now she finds out that there's something else going on and he's not talking about why. And I mean, we all know it's because he's a good Catholic boy, but whatever.
So they're only... Philippe says they're only playing at marriage. And he can smell that they haven't mated. He says... He literally says, you both have distinct scents. And basically what he leaves unsaid is they ain't been merged yet. There's no mark. There's no scent of him on you. There's no permanent scent of him on you, which there would be if you had consummated. And Philippe Saul. And then anyway, he's like, you know, it's time for bed. And Philippe Saul, yeah, you won't be sharing a bed. So basically, is this where Matthew get? Well, Matthew was already Catholic before he died. But is this where Matthew gets his more stodginess? Because Philippe has these same. Or is Philippe doing it because he knew it would bug Matthew and Diana?
I think it's a power play. Just like everything he does in this episode is a power play. Because, yes, I think it's just one more thing he can do. Separate them. One more thing that I can do. And it's my house, so it's my rules. I think he's also a little bit of a prude, right? So I don't think that that's not playing a part. But everything he does in this episode between giving her the keys, well, it's, you know, you're the highest ranking female, so here's a job for you. But everything he does in the episode, it's just, I get to choose. I have the power here. And it's just every little way that he can show that he's in charge and to try to put Matthew back under his heel because Matthew isn't doing what he's supposed to be doing, according to the timeline.
Something that, and I thought about it during the episode too, but I don't think I remarked on it again. Something that goes not unmentioned, it goes addressed, but it's addressed really quickly, and then it's like it's noticed really quickly, and then it's let go, which I think they have to for this episode because we have 206 coming up, which serves that purpose. But there's only one reference to, you don't need more than one reference because then you know he understands. But there's a reference that, like I said, Philippe says he realizes they're time travelers, and he's like, why did you come? Oh, you know, you only would have come if you must be in danger at some point in the future, so that's why you came. That's it. Like, then they go on and talk about her bio and everything. So they don't spend any conversation about that, and that's not a bad thing. But I'm saying, for just remember that he knows that something's going on in the future. Now, that something is, of course, Diana's her music. Who knows? She could be a closet musician. Diana's magic and the book, right? Those are the things. And I think they'll get there. But because they don't talk about it, and because we don't get, at least in this episode, a lot of discussion, or actually any discussion, between Philippe and Matthew about, you know, what's going on in that time. Tell me what you can, or whatever. And there are certain things that he may or may not want to say because of the situation with Philippe in the future. So just make note that Philippe realizes they're time travelers, and that they must be in danger. But that conversation is for a later time, and it will come back. So after they're sent off to bed, separate rooms, Diana comes in hot because he takes her to the bedroom that she's going to be in. And she's like, you lied to me. And he says, no, he says, not a lie. We are mated as far as I'm concerned. And she's like, why are you holding back? What's going on? And she slaps him when he suggests, maybe you should bed my father.
Gross. That was gross and unnecessary, man.
And if I'm not mistaken, we could have gotten it before, but now, like, I think it's the first, or maybe not, no, probably not the first. I think it's the second or third time. After she slaps him and throws him out, and he's there, like, you know, there, like, you know, kind of trying to get himself under control, we see the blood rain starting to come out again, and we get the growl.
I think we should change the term from blood rage to blood temper tantrum, because, I mean, he doesn't really rage. He just has little temper tantrums.
Well, the rage is...
blood tantrum.
Yeah, rage is more like what we saw with that whatever beast is doing the murders in Oxford. That's more rage.
I know who it is.
But let's not spoil. So the blood rage is beginning to come out. And Philippe has had the effect that he has wanted. And he goes...
Philippe is so funny. Have you eaten? He's such a parent.
He goes to see his father. He's like, you... He goes, he gets after him and he calls him out. But Philippe calls him out and says he's sinning. And Matthew's like, no, I'm not. What are you talking about? He's like, you're lying to her. And he's like, I'm not lying to her. And he's like, the sin of omission. By not telling her everything, you're leaving this really one big thing, important thing out. And obviously she's upset about it. So yeah, it's come to the point where it may have been not a big deal, but now it is a big deal. And then things begin to break away. The music reflects it. Philippe says something. He noticed he's now we get, I'm sorry. We actually do get to it this episode. Philippe says something is going on in his own time. This is back to that TT, back to the, you were in danger. Why did you come to this time otherwise? So Philippe brings it back to that line of chat. And as soon as he said it, as soon as he says it, Matthew's face changes. But they don't discuss it anymore. So notice. So we have from Matthew on the way before we get there. Matthew says a wound will be ripped open. A wound, not a wound. A wound of loss. A wound of loss. And the only loss, and it has to be a wound. If it's going to be ripped open, that means it has to have healed, right? At least somewhat. And it's only the loss of Philippe. It has to be because he's got Isabeau in the future. He's got Diana now. The only thing he has that he's about to see that he doesn't have in the future is Philippe. So that wound has now come ripped open, and he's not addressing it. So that's. That may be something that we see more of. We'll have to see. And the next morning, Matthew goes out to feed/hunt. And I love it. He's in all that black leather. Ooh, that was a good outfit for him. And while he's gone, I love this scene so much. Can I tell you how much I cackled? Diana is woken up by a servant who will not freaking take no for an answer.
She's like, you don't pay my bills.
You're not. Exactly. You're not my boss.
Exactly. You don't sign my paycheck.
Girl, maybe she should have put on Isabeau's ring sooner. She would have had this girl listening to her.
Or she should have just been like, that was a rhetorical, when you're ready. Are you ready? You're ready. You need to get up now.
That was so funny. I've never seen anything.
I'm not allowed to be rude to you, but I'm also not allowed to leave this room.
Exactly. My thing, she could have literally, I mean, she didn't, and she didn't need to, because what she did was very effective. But I just love that. You know, like Philippe's reach, yes, it's his house, but Philippe's reach is even to someone who's technically not under his rule. But since she's in his house, she, you know, abides by it. Just, it was so perfect. I loved it. I was like, that servant ain't taking no guff. She knows who has her back. She excuses the servant, but she refuses to budge. And he's like, damn it, it must be Philippe. So she's like, fine. So she gets dressed. She goes to see Philippe and she's like, I get it. Your house, your rules. Philippe, as Summer said, gives her the keys as the highest ranking woman of the castle since Isabeau is gone. And he's like, it's a remark of respect. And she's like, well, okay, fine. Which one is for the library? And he says, oh, we don't lock up books in this house. Reading seldom leads to bad behavior. And she says, you'd be surprised. Perfect.
I love that line, though.
Me too.
We do not lock up books in this house.
I love that, too. I love that. That should be like a family motto. We do not lock up books in this house. So it's a gorgeous theme as she's in the gorgeous library and he leaves her to read. And this is the music. The music that we hear is similar, at least in my memory, similar to music that we hear when the Book of Life, when Mol Sedney 2 is brought up. It's akin to that. And then quick flash of a scene. We see Matthew is hunting and he sees deer and he goes after it. So we're, you know, he's going to feed, which is he needs to do. So while Matthew is gone, a male witch comes to see Philippe. Actually, he comes to see Diana, but he has to go through Philippe. And he says, it's a matter of some urgency. I heard that a witch has come here and I need to figure something out.
Didn't Philippe call the witch?
I'm about to ask you that.
I thought, in my recollection, he summoned like the village witch. Like they had a witch.
So I don't know that the show makes a distinction. We may find out more. I know that the guy arrived. Philippe lets him in. And then they go into...
Well, the guy himself says, I was drawn by her power. Or Philippe says that he was drawn by Diana's power.
Yeah, but that could be a lie. So what does the dude say when he comes? I'll have to go back and watch that. It's still very possible that Philippe summoned him. And it makes me think they were, because if you remember, when he comes comes in to see Philippe, they go into a room and shut the door. They don't go immediately to Diana.
Right. Well,
so they're talking, or at least it's made to appear that they're talking.
That would work either way, because if he just showed up of his own volition, there's no way that he would be escorted directly to Diana. He goes to the man of the house then decides what happened. But if he was summoned by Philippe, there still would have been a, hey, you summoned me, what's up? Okay, here's what's going down. I need you to go upstairs and check this chick out. So either one of those things work with how it was filmed.
Exactly. So he says it's a matter of some urgency. And when they do go to see Diana, like, it's so funny. Like, it's almost like, why would she be in trouble for getting up and going across the room and getting into one of her own bags? When just before they make it in, she gets up and she doesn't look at the door like she hears someone coming, but she gets up and she doesn't rush. She goes to the bag or to a little box in her bag and gets out Isabeau's ring and puts it on. And then she hears them. She hurries up and puts it away and goes back to sit down. I'm like, it was weird to me, like, why she felt... she couldn't, like, what was she going to be caught getting into her own bag? That part didn't make sense to me.
I don't think she would be in trouble. I think it's, did she put the ring back on or did she put the ring away?
But yeah, but why rush? I think she put it on her. I don't think she has it on yet. He would have seen it the night before.
Right. No, I know she got it out of the bag, but I'm saying I don't recall. I think she may have put it back. And if she took it off her finger and put it back, she didn't want them to see the ring.
Oh, so that, okay. So that could have been why she rushed. She got up to go either put it on or look at it. And then when she heard a noise, she put it away and ran to sit back down. Okay, that makes more sense to me.
Now, she is wearing it in the next episode at some point.
She puts it on at some point because Philippe sees it, yeah. So the dudes come to see her. Mr. André Champier is his name. He says he sensed her presence. Philippe's all, yo, like hands off. Like, he doesn't do this, but this is metaphorically what I'm saying. He's like, yo, hands, you know, my hands are off. I don't meddle in the business of witches. But he is just like, for different reasons, but he is just like Nock, meaning wants to own her, kill her, all this stuff, wants the stuff out of her head, whatever. So he holds her head, reads her thoughts, and he sees at least he sees at least a few things, definitely being attacked. He calls her a traitor.
I feel like this scene and the scenes like this in the show are equivalent to all the Outlander rape scenes. So instead of having sexual rape.
Well, it kind of is rape.
Which is all over the place in Outlander, right? They have this kind of rape. It's still no means no, right? So there, I found this much more disturbing to me. The forced memory pulling attempting thing was much more, well, while everyone watched, and by everyone, I mean, you know, Philippe, just watched it happen, felt grosser to me than almost any of the rape scenes in Outlander. And I say almost.
Yeah, it was hard to watch, and not just because of what was going on. It was hard to watch, right? By itself. What made it almost harder was that I don't give a poop squirt what he says or his reasons. He did jack shizzle to help her. That's something that I can't stand by, no matter what. So I can't stand, like, Philippe would have watched her be raped, basically. Yes, I understand he doesn't get involved in the business of witches, but I can't. That is not justifiable at any level in any time. Anyhoozle, he calls her, the male witch calls her a traitor, and he tells Philippe she's a traitor. And he says he wants to take her memories, and she screams. And as Matthew, thankfully, is coming back from his hunt, hears her, he comes in. And when he comes in, she fancy hands his knife from him, and she stabs the witch.
Both work.
So, okay, so now I have a question, and I had the question when I was watching it and taking notes too. As you said, the witch arriving, them going into Philippe's study or into somewhere to chat before going into Diana, and then him saying, I sensed her power, right? I was summoned by her, that kind of thing. And as you said, that could go for either way. It could legit be what happened, or he could be saying that as a way of explaining his presence,
right,
even though Philippe summoned him. However, when you put that together with Matthew being gone at Philippe's insistence and encouragement, what's the futz? To me, all hands, fingers, toes, everything points to Philippe. I think it was all Philippe. Anyhoozle, my last question was, do we remember how much Philippe had to do with this? And I think I just answered my question. I could be wrong. You guys, tell me I'm wrong. That's fine. We can absolutely have a difference of opinion. Summer is going to go back and watch anyway, just to see if we can clarify, you know, maybe it's more clear. Maybe there is something that we are not remembering from these last few scenes. But she fancy hands hit Matthew's knife from across the room. That was a big booty knife, like, gracious, a dagger, basically. Stabs the dude. He dies. And my last comment was, Diana's badass.
You know, this is from earlier in the episode. I knew it was happening and I knew they were on their way to Septuor. But for whatever reason, I didn't expect them to be at Septuor.
I think it's because we think about it in later time.
Well, and in my brain, it's a new place. We're going to a new place. We've never seen Philippe. Philippe is in a place now.
Yes, he's actually somewhere to go see.
It's like, I knew they're going to Septuor, but when they arrived at Septuor, I was surprised that it was Septuor, which is strange. Anywhoozle, that was episode 205. Join us next time when we will be discussing episode 206. It looks like it's going to be a good one, y'all.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We are so excited to get to 206, which we will say, well, I will say, I can't say for summer. 206 is my favorite of season 2. Summer, was it yours?
I enjoyed 6.
Okay, I guess we'll go with that. Okay, y'all. Basically,
get ready.
206 is a tour de force and a tour de tears. Pour moi, anyway. Thank you as always so much for listening.